Let me wrap up for a couple of seconds.
All right, yeah, we'll be in touch.
It's Dave O'Neill here, and welcome to The Debrief, which is a podcast where I basically drive home with a comedian after a gig. And Cal Wilson's my guest.
Hi, I'm going to reverse, and I bet it's going to make noises.
Yeah, you've got a camera in your car. That's very flashy. I don't have one of those.
Well, my paranoia is children getting run over in driveways.
Oh, yeah. That's normally bigger four-wheel drives. You got a four-wheel drive?
Yeah, it's a four-wheel drive. It's not like a little one. No, it's not massive.
And we've just done the Grandview Hotel together, which is the comedy night that I run on a Wednesday in Fairfield. And you were fantastic, Kel.
Oh, thank you. It's always a fun gig. I'm always a bit worried because I'm like, everyone seems to be regulars. And so I'm like, do you know my material as well as I know my material?
But you don't have to worry too much. You haven't been here for a while.
No, not for a few months, I reckon.
You turn over your material a fair bit.
Yeah, I do. I try to because it keeps it interesting. And also, like, I've just done a festival show, so I had an hour of stuff to choose from.
But I saw your festival show. I saw you too.
In Bloody Brisbane.
We shared a theatre in Brisbane, the beautiful Vizzy. Well, you feel like a really important comedian, I have to say, doing that theatre in Brisbane.
It's beautiful.
But I didn't see a lot of that material tonight. Like, I was interested that you started off with stuff about the roadshow. You've just done the comedy festival roadshow. And that's... Do you always try and start off with something relatively new?
Yeah, just to feel like... to feel like it's new for me, so the audience feels like, oh, I'm getting new stuff. I'm not getting the same old.
Yeah, that's true. It's not a bad point. I've got to remember that.
You can always learn something new.
I know, you can. Well, this is the thing. You can. That's why I still love watching comedy. And do you have a process or some sort of thing that you do after gigs?
Normally, as I'm driving home, I think if it's been a good gig, I think about all the good things that I said and enjoy going back over those. Yeah, and if it's been a shit gig, I'm going back over the things that I said that I hated.
Yeah.
And then I abide by Milliken's Law, which is something that Sarah Milliken came up with.
She's very funny.
She's so funny and so great. So her thing is you can only dwell on a gig until 11 o'clock the next morning. So whether it was the worst gig in the world, you can only dwell on it till 11 o'clock. And if it was the best gig in the world, you can only dwell on it till 11 o'clock. So,
that's a good point,
I'm way better at dealing with gigs that I haven't enjoyed than I used to be.
Yeah, and do you get over bad ones quicker?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And also, I think, and this is going to sound like one of those clichés, but since having a kid, I'm like, well, it doesn't really matter.
It's very true. It's very true. You go, it's very true. I mean, and also, do you find having children, I've got three myself, I didn't have my partner had them. Let's get that straight. And actually, you did some very funny stuff about having one child tonight.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. That was very funny. Oh, you're going to have more? Are you going to have any more?
Yeah.
Have any more?
Yeah, and the thing is, like, it doesn't matter what you say. Like, I'm 46, and so I go, I'm too old. Oh, no, you're not. Yeah. Oh, you could have another. It's like, I don't want to be a 50-year-old.
No, with a 4-year-old.
First-time mum. Yeah, like, first-time mum as if I'm getting rid of the first one. And women do it, and all power to them, but it's like, I creak enough as it is.
Oh, man,
you know?
It'd be hard. It'd be hardcore. I mean, you see it with men all the time because, of course, their biological clock is different from their body is different, as we all know. See, I see guys at school that are getting on 60 with a 5-year-old. You're like, oh, man, that's hardcore.
Yeah.
But after a show, is there any food or music or...
Oh, I probably listen to podcasts on the way home.
Yeah, you love a podcast.
I love a podcast.
What's your favourite one at the moment? You're always good for recommendations.
Okay, my favourite one at the moment, and I was very late to this, is My Dad Wrote a Porno.
Oh, yeah, that's funny.
Which is...
The British guys. Yeah, that is
so
very
funny.
So
three friends dissecting the appallingly written, self-published pornography that one of their dads has written, and it's... Yeah. Just ridiculous.
Who writes them in his garden shed, apparently.
Yeah, in the pavilion.
The thing
I love about it so much is that they're all obviously old friends and they adore each other and they know how to talk, so they're not talking over each other and they obviously are all really enjoying each other's company and it's just hilarious.
It's a very funny
one. It's my favourite one.
It's a funny one, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
And The Moth is always my favourite.
The Moth is great. I bought The Moth book.
Oh, cool.
Which is supposed to be the American one. Well, it's Canadian originally, isn't it?
No, it started in Georgia.
Yeah, you're an expert. You're aren't you the Australian representative of the Moth?
Well, it makes it sound like I'm an athlete. I host their Melbourne Moth Story Slams. And we just had our Grand Slam the other night, which was the it was amazing.
Is this where, I mean, I remember you telling me this, because I love that book so much, that you don't actually know whether you're getting up and telling a story.
No, they draw
you out of a hat.
Yeah, so it's really, and it's really interesting, because stand-ups that have done it have found it absolutely terrifying. And you go, you're a stand-up, you perform all the time, why is this unnerving? But because your name goes into a hat, and then the host draws out the first storyteller, they tell their story, then they draw out the next storyteller's hat, next storyteller's name, and they... So you only get 5 minutes notice that you're going to tell your story. And you might not tell your story at all. You might not get picked out of your hat. But if you don't get called out at the end of the night, if there are names left over, they all get up and tell the first line of their story.
Oh, wow.
Which is a really great, tantalising thing to just hear the first line of something and not to know how it ended. Yeah, it ends it. It's a really beautiful way to end it.
Wow, yeah, because the book is amazing. You tell stories in your stand-up, but there is a difference between storytelling and stand-up, though, isn't there?
Yeah, and because of the challenge that I set myself is because the Moth stories are true, like it's supposed to be true stories told live without notes, is that I don't give myself the out of a punchline. So I can't embellish it. I can tell it in an entertaining way, but I can't put a thing in that didn't happen.
Yeah, which we do in stories. In stand-up we do.
Yeah, so... And it's, you know, I've cried on stage at the Moth, like telling stories, you know, it's not always funny. There's been beautiful stories from other people, and I've told stories that I would never tell in stand-up.
No. Have you ever told a story that then you've put into a festival show or a stand-up? That you've gone, oh, this is actually quite funny, I might use this.
Yeah, what have I done? It's probably been more the other way around, where I've had a story that I've told a stand-up, and then I've kind of stripped it back and told the
truth of the
story. But then in my show this year, I did a story that wasn't funny. That wasn't really funny. It was just about being held down and bitten on the ass by rugby players.
Yeah, that was horrible.
But that all tied in with the flow of the show and everything like that. So that was
it was
an interesting thing to do.
But you can do that in an hour show. That's the thing about a festival style show. It's different from
I wouldn't have done that at the Grand Venue.
They probably would have enjoyed it. Yeah, it's only $15 to get in. Come on. Hey, this episode of The Debrief is brought to you by Sheba. It's a great rideshare app where all the drivers are women. That's right, every single driver is a woman. So set up your account by downloading the Apple or Android app, and multiple users can use the one account. Enjoy the one account. And also, this is a great idea for dads like myself. You can set up an account for your daughters. Corporate accounts are available too. Sheba also takes booking. It's female-only driving service. Also, thanks to CoinJar. Set up a CoinJar account to buy and sell Bitcoin. It's really, really easy. No, trust me, it is. Just go to nearly.com.au/thedebrief to get a bonus when you set up your account. And Homey, they're a Melbourne-based social enterprise creating pathways out of homelessness. Do you know at the moment there's about 100,000 Australians live without a permanent address, and of those, 20,000 people sleep on the streets or in a makeshift shelter. Why not change this? Come on. Go to www.homey.com.au. Okay, back to the program. Yes, you're listening to The Debrief here with Cal Wilson. She's driving herself home. I'm just sitting in the car. So I haven't worked out how I'm going to get home.
I feel really guilty about this. I feel like we should get halfway home and then I should turn around and drive you back.
No. That's cool. I mean, you live in the western suburbs of Melbourne. I used to live in the west.
You used to live there?
Yeah, I used to live there.
And it's changed.
It's changed a lot, hasn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of cafes.
Yeah. Houses going for over $1 million.
Oh, it's amazing. But I might just go revisit some of my old haunts. But just some of the pubs have closed down that I used to go to. Not that
where
I went to many.
Where did you used to go?
I used to go to the Mona in Seddon, which is still there. And there was a great one called the, I can't remember what it was called. It was in the back streets of Middle Footscray. And it was a classic old pub, but I think it's apartments.
Not Back Alley Sally.
No, not Back Alley Sally.
Back Alley Sally's is a good
oh,
pizza.
Really?
Yeah, and a nice bar upstairs.
No, that was definitely no. It was called the Wello, the Pando, the something like that. It was good. But anyway, I've quite missed the West.
Yeah, I like it. It's I wish there were more of us out there, is the only thing. But I love living out there.
Yeah, well, of course, because you're from New Zealand, you may not... But your husband's from Melbourne, isn't
he? Yes, he's from Frankston, though, so he doesn't get to throw any stones at sunshine.
Yeah, exactly. Because the stigma of the West has changed a lot, though, now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, we've lived there for 10 years, and we've seen it change a lot. It's all the people that can't afford or couldn't afford Thornbury or North.
That's right.
Sort of come out our way.
Exactly. Well, that's how I ended up out there, that's for sure. We're talking about just storytelling, etc., etc. How do you get ready like a festival show, which is kind of different from stand-up? It is stand-up, but it's often has a theme and mixed with stories. How do you get that hour ready? I'm always intrigued by this process.
It's changed, I reckon, over the last few years for me. Like, I used to write everything down, like, word for word, and then learn it and then try it out and then take bits out. But now I start off with ideas and then I talk those ideas through at a trial show. So, so like, the Barracuda story that I told in this year's festival show, I just said that aloud a few times without any jokes in it.
Yeah, and just to say it in public.
Literally ask the audience afterwards, is that something you would be interested in hearing more of? Like, it sounded like a survey or something. But and everyone was like, yeah, you should tell that story. So kind of now I tend to work things up more on stage. I used to write it down word for word.
Sure, sure.
And I write things down on bits of paper and I push the bits of paper around the floor until they're in the right order.
Oh, wow. And does anyone help you? Is there anyone that you trust that you think is a good judge for you?
Yes, I have other comedian friends that are really great, like Felicity Ward, who's based in the UK now. She came to a trial show and she was really great for sticking extra gags in and going, get rid of that and put that there kind of thing. And there's another fantastic woman called Deborah Frances White who does a brilliant podcast called The Guilty Feminist, which is really
great. Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Brilliant podcast. So she came to that night as well, just accidentally, because she was catching up with Hannah Gadsby, and so she ended up giving me some great suggestions too. So I find what I find really useful, and Claire Hooper is really great as well.
Sure.
I guess it's my friends who are comedians who know me and know what my voice is, I guess.
Yeah.
And who I am comfortable taking criticism from are really great to write with. Even to just sit down in the same room with someone else and talk about things is really great.
It definitely helps. Mm. It definitely helps.
What do you do?
I'm similar to you, and I mean, I have a regular comedy night that I run at the Grandview, which has come from, and I try a lot of stuff out there because, you know, when you're emceeing a regular night, all the locals know me, and I tell a story and it doesn't work, and I go, anyway, here's Cal Wilson, everyone. Thanks for coming. And I have Brad Oakes, the comedian.
Yeah, Brad is brilliant.
Yeah, he's very good. I mean, he's helped me so much over the years just with, because it's so daunting sometimes putting together a festival show.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, what am I going to do? I mean, this year I was lucky. I wrote a book and I did the book as a show.
Yeah, great.
So it was all there. But even then, Brad still helped me. It was just a matter of putting stuff in. And because he's my age, he grew up in the same area as me. It's very helpful. And like you and like Felicity, if you get on well with someone and they understand your voice, it's easy.
Yeah. And like I really love, I mean, I think a big thing for me to realise was that collaboration is great.
Yes.
Rather than like, I think when I started out, I would be like, oh, I can't take a joke from someone else because it has to be absolutely all of my jokes. But now,
oh no, I'm happy to take jokes.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Like, because what happens is like you come up with joke one and joke two and then someone else will go, oh, there's your third joke for that. And
they tag stuff. Definitely.
I love doing that for other people as well. I think I'm quite good at doing that.
You've worked as a writer. Definitely.
And it's always lovely to see someone deliver a line that you gave them.
Come up with.
And it's gorgeous and it works. And then it, you know, and it's amazing how like a line will change a bit into a much bigger bit and you'll feel really fresh and stuff like that. And it's really lovely when someone does that for you and you do it.
Oh, definitely.
For them. Yeah.
It's just a second pair of eyes and ears.
Yeah, yeah.
What about your partner? Your husband, does he help or is he critical?
No, he hates it. His
Oh, really?
His most feared question from me is, hey, do you think this is funny?
Oh, yeah, right.
Like, he gets this look of terror in his eyes because he can't visualise what the joke is in the context of a comedy room or whatever, so it's just me in the kitchen going, do you think this is a funny idea?
It's different.
He can't see it and then he panics because he knows I'll get cross about it. I just don't ask him anymore, and he won't let me, even if I've done a bit that's worked or something, and I'll go, oh, let me tell you about this. He's like, no, I just want to see the show. I'll see the show when it's all finished.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and so he'll come sort of with fresh eyes as a punter. And I always warn him if I'm going to talk about him. Like, I always
good idea.
Tell him, and he's always like, is it funny and is it going to pay the mortgage? And if it is both of those things, it's fine.
I had to say, I saw him the other night when they had drinks during the comedy festival, and I thought he was one of those Irish comedians because I hadn't seen him for years. I thought it was, in my mind, he was David O'Doherty or Jason Byrne or one.
Oh, that's funny.
And then you were sort of getting,
cozying up to him.
Cozying up. Jeez, what Kevles is. I felt like saying, she's got a child, you know, sir. And then I realised, that's Kel's husband.
Yes. Yeah, I suppose he's bearded now.
Yeah, that's right, he's got a beard.
That's funny. I remember when I was in New Zealand, I dyed my hair platinum blonde, cut it all off and dyed it platinum blonde. And I had someone ring me up to tell me that my boyfriend was cheating on me with a blonde woman.
Oh, funny.
Because they'd seen me out and not realised it was me.
And of course you are New Zealand, we all know that. You started in New Zealand, didn't you?
Yeah.
So which place, Wellington or Auckland?
Christchurch.
Oh, Christchurch.
So how it started for me was we started an improv company in Christchurch,
right.
Called Scared. We did a late night show called Scared Scriptless, and our company was called the Court Jesters at the Court Theatre.
Cool.
And so I did improv for 5 years. Before I ever did stand up.
Ah, that's why you're good at improv.
Yeah, and right. I love improv. It's still my first.
The pieces are falling into place in my brain, right.
So we were really fortunate. Like, we were just at a time when the theatre gave us rehearsal space for free. They gave us a tiny, tiny rent for the main stage at 11 o'clock on a Friday night. So we did all of our learning on stage. So all of my waitressing jobs have been in the industry. You know, kind of like I've always earned my living from doing shows, which has been, I've been so fortunate in that. And then we do corporate gigs as improvisers. And then our director said, we need to offer more, a bigger range of stuff.
Can anyone sing or juggle?
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You and you go and try stand up. And so me and a couple of other people went and wrote some stand up, and we were shit, but Christchurch hadn't seen stand up before. There was no tradition of it. And so it was our audience that already knew us, and trusted us, kind of thing. And so they were really kind to us, and we just kept doing it and got better.
And then, so how long did you do that in New Zealand before you moved to Melbourne?
I was 33, and I'd been doing improv since I was like 17.
You moved here when you were 33?
Yeah.
Oh, so when I can remember, I met you at Ballarat Uni doing a gig with a Scared Weird Little Guys.
Yes.
And it was like a big student night.
Yes.
And they had a few students that had won a competition to perform.
That's right.
And the poor guy was so nervous backstage. That's where I first saw you, definitely when I first saw you, I reckon.
Yeah.
Because word got around. Because, I mean, Alan Brough would have come out at a similar time, maybe.
Yeah, I think he was a couple of years ahead of me.
Yes.
Yeah.
But how was that, moving to Melbourne from...
Well, it was really, it was exciting. And what had happened was I'd come out here and had a look at the festival and done like a gig at Upfront. And then the next year I'd come out and done a show and I got Best Newcomer. And then I came out again and then decided I wanted to move to Melbourne. But I'd met my first festival friends were Damien Callan and Lawrence Mooney.
Well, they're nice boys.
Yes. And so then I got a job on Skit House, but I was moving here anyway. I was going to move here to, you know, a 10-minute spot at the local or...
A
full-time job on a sketch comedy, whatever they decided kind of thing. And so by the time I got here and got that job, I knew everybody in the cast. So it felt like...
Yeah, cool.
It felt like coming to school halfway through term, but I knew all the kids.
Yeah. You wrote on Skit House, did you?
And appeared in it as well.
Oh, you appeared in it? That's
right.
As
a tiny child. I was so... Yeah.
Skid House was, 10 years ago now?
14 years ago.
14 years ago.
Yeah. And it's now getting to the point where people come up to me and say, I watched you when I was growing up.
In school. Oh. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Interesting. Well, I mean, I appeared on Hey Hey. So, so long ago now. Okay, I wouldn't say a meteoric ride, you just a rise, you just... Just it was an incremental rise in your level of comedy.
And I feel very fortunate that, like, you know, like when I was starting out, I gave myself 5 years. Hello, truck. Gave myself 5 years to make a living, and then I was going to go into my fallback career, which was advertising.
Yeah, right.
And I've never had to go into advertising. You know,
have you ever worked in advertising?
No, I wrote ads for student radio.
Wow.
One of them won an award, but the station manager claimed he'd written it, and he won the award.
What?
So that was great.
Ripped off.
Yeah, totally ripped off.
So, right, if you know what, 5 years is a perfect... I reckon that's the right amount of time. That's what I say to young comics. You've got to give it 5 years, and after 5 years, you've got to assess if you're being successful. And often people move sideways into writing or whatever. Yeah. But you've got to give it 5 years, and you've got to go hard too, I reckon.
Yeah, and I reckon it was 5 years before I even called myself a comedian. Like, I was really... I didn't ever want to say I was a comedian at
before
a stage.
You're getting paid.
Yeah, but, and also at a stage where someone could go, no, you're not. You know, like.
Oh, I've met guys who work in bookshops who say they're comedians. I'm like,
I remember hosting Raw one year, and it was like people getting up on stage for the first time, which is always really exciting and everything. But I asked this guy what he wanted in his intro, and he goes, oh, just call me a comedian from Ringwood. I was like, dude, this is literally your first time on stage.
You know when you get up in the morning, you go somewhere, where is it? Is it a shop? Is it an office? Is it a building site? We'll just go with that. Oh, let's just take in the West. This is, I used to live around here. I used to walk these streets because I had very small children.
You did too.
Yeah, babies. Oh, I know these streets.
It's changed, but now the big giant Bunnings on the right.
I know, the Bunnings is new. That wasn't there.
Denny's factory.
That was not there. You know, my dad used to drive from the outer eastern suburbs to the Air Force Base in Laverton in the 70s.
Wow.
Because he was in the Air Force. And there used to be a cafe on the corner up here called the Coffee Pot. Wouldn't you love it if the Coffee Pot opened 24 hours, he said.
Oh.
And they used to stop there for a cigarette and some sandwiches and coffee at the Great Coffee Pot. It was a corner of, I think there's a Hungry Jack's there now.
Oh, I know exactly where that is.
Yeah, corner of Somerville Road and the Coffee Pot. Oh, great memories, Kev. Yeah. Plenty of sin. And so you don't mind writing on other people's shows? You wrote on Charlie Pickering's show for a while.
Yeah.
You enjoy that?
Yeah, it was nice. It was really nice to go to a place where there were other people to talk to.
Yeah, if you've had children, we know what isolation is.
No, it's
about.
It's more about you know, when you're on stage by yourself.
Lonely.
And it's lonely, and you have to come up with the majority of the material yourself. And it was nice to go and work with a bunch of people who I knew and loved, and also having known Charlie for a million years, like, I knew what his voice was, and so it was nice to do that. It was good to get out of my comfort zone, because, like, politics and things, that's not
you don't talk about that on stage
No. And so that was really good for me, kind of stretch those muscles, and
Sounded pretty full on, though, by what I heard.
Yeah.
It was long days on the weekly.
But television is long days. Like, there's always long days, you know.
Yeah.
But it was really great. I did it for 2 seasons and I loved it. And then I kind of was like, oh, yeah, I also like to do...
You're a performer.
...my things on stage, you know.
Yeah.
And, I wrote a kid's book after I finished up at the Weekly. Yeah, so that's coming out next year.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm
what level of child is it for?
It's sort of 6+.
Oh, is it a picture book or a...
It's chapters.
Chapter book, as we say in the parenting world.
Yes, so it's a chapter book with lots of illustrations. And I'm really excited because an old friend of mine is doing the illustrations.
Oh, great. So. And what's it called? Or?
I don't know what it's called. Oh. I don't know what they've gone with. It's gonna be out next year, and I'm writing my second one.
Cool.
Now. Yeah, so that's exciting. I feel like it's not going to be real until I see the book
in my
hand. But you've written kids' books.
I've written years. I wrote kids' books before I had kids, which was a mistake. And my partner, my wife, illustrated them.
That's pretty romantic.
Yeah, oh, no, we fought a lot. And we wrote like a chapter joke book for grade 4s and 5s called Lies Your Parents Tell You, which we thought was hilarious when we had no children. But, you know, don't go swimming straight after lunch.
Yeah.
Don't swallow the seeds in the watermelon. A tree will grow in your stomach. And except now my daughter sits up in bed reading it and quotes it back to me. Dad, you said in this book. I'm like, yeah, I didn't have any children.
Yeah, my son quotes a bit out of the book because he's read the book.
Oh, cool.
Give me a critique of the book.
Of course.
And he's quoted bits back at me and I'm like, oh, I wish I'd never said that.
I know. Oh, yeah, well, I think if you've had children, it would be easier to write a book.
Yeah, and in the book is basically stories I used to tell my son at bedtime.
Yeah,
so,
awesome.
So I had a real, I knew the universe of, you know, I knew all the characters really well,
great.
And stuff. And, yeah, it was really fun and I'm really excited.
As my son goes, tell us a story with your mouth. That's what he used to say. So I just couldn't get away with reading Dr. Seuss again.
Yeah.
Which I might add, his books are really long. I don't know why he wrote such long books. Interesting.
I also got to the point where I was telling Digby stories and I would be so tired when he was a lot younger. I'd be so tired that I would fall asleep, that I would keep talking and I'd just be narrating what I was seeing in my half dream.
Really?
Yeah, like I'd just keep...
It's very H.R. Puffin stuff.
Yeah.
Trippy.
And then he'd go, Mum, and I'd wake up again and go, sorry, what was I talking about?
Oh, that's exciting. It's coming out next year.
Yeah, next year, beginning of next year.
Cool.
Yeah.
Also in your career, you've appeared on a lot of TV shows. I mean, you've done QI, haven't you?
Yes.
Have you done that once or twice?
Twice.
Now, that is such a big show to go on. Were you intimidated?
I was. But
you know, like when we've done shows like Spicks and Specks together or whatever, you kind of know everyone.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, there's Adam and there's Miff and there's Alan and we know them. But QI, is it?
I mean, I think the good thing about it was they came out and did a live tour here. And so I got on that live tour and did a couple of shows. And Stephen and Alan were both so lovely. And Stephen Fry was such a generous host. Like, he was really great at directing attention to you and giving you time to speak and all that kind of stuff. And
which doesn't happen on some panel shows.
No. Some panel shows are really combative and it's really hard to get a word out. Yes. I'm literally just taking you to my house.
I know we're going. We're in heavy western suburbs here.
You can have a cup of tea before you get your Uber back to your car. But yeah, and Alan, I knew Alan, like our kids had hung out together when they were over here. And so I kind of knew him and he was really great at kind of just being like a good wingman.
Alan Davies. He was supportive.
Yeah, really supportive. They're both really supportive. And then the other people that I was on with were lovely. Jimmy Carr and Jupiter.
Oh my God, heavy hitters.
Jack Whitehall.
Young guy.
And so they're all really lovely and really welcoming. And I got to meet Sandy Toksvig, which I was so excited about because I just adore her. And then she invited me to come back on her radio show.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so it was really. And Sarah Millican gave me this great piece of advice, which was let the audience hear you speak before the show so that when you say your first line, they're not going, oh, what's that accent?
That's actually a very for someone who doesn't come from England, that is a very good point.
Yeah, and it was like I've thought about it often since in other scenarios that I've been in on TV is that always chat to the audience.
Beforehand,
so that you've established a rapport and they know what you sound like and they're not trying to figure out where is she from, what's that kind of.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I know someone told me that very on, and when I did stand up on the midday show hosted by Darren Hinch, which was a great. I know that history. I know you may not have been around when the midday show
was not around for the midday
hosted by Ray Martin for a long time, then Darren and then Kerry Ann Kennelly, maybe Darren was the last 2 years. Anyway, someone told me, and I went out before in the ad break and said, guys, I'm gonna do some stand up in a minute, just laugh. My parents are watching, please don't let me die on TV. And they were great. So I reckon it is good to talk to the audience a little bit. Oh my God, is this where you live?
This is where I live. We've driven you all to my house.
That's nice around here, isn't it?
It's pretty good.
The people bag sunshine.
No, it's a good little street. We have
got trees and everything.
Yeah.
Wow. Which is your? Oh, this is your house here.
This is my house here. God. Got lovely neighbours on both sides.
It's an old. Is that a kalbung that's been done up?
No, it was a house that was built new, but in the style of the other old houses in the street.
And you've got the basketball hoop
out the front.
I don't want to identify your house too much.
Giant flashing neon sign that says Cal Wilson lives here.
One of the few sunshine celebrities, ladies and gentlemen.
Apart from Car Pies, which is an excellent pie shop, which won Australia's best pie.
Yum.
And it's a Kiwi pie shop.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
I wonder if we open now. I don't think so.
No, but next time I see you, I'll bring you one.
Cool. Well, Cal Wilson, thanks for being on my podcast.
Thanks for being in my car.
Yeah. I'm going to get home from sunshine now. I just realised the reality of the situation.
Do you want me to drive you back?
No, you don't have to drive me back. No. That's absolutely... I will get transport from here. I'll get a train.
No, don't get a train.
How far is it to the railway station?
It's like 5 minutes from the railway station. You don't want to go to sunshine and train station at
night.
Right.
You're right. It's 11 o'clock on a Wednesday night.
What about Uber? Are you familiar with Uber?
Yeah, I'll get a taxi. I'm not into the Uber world. But
really? Do you mind? I can...
No, that's all right. I'll be fine. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ring my wife and get her to wake up the three children. Get him in the car. I'll ring my dad, who's 82 years old. Where are you? Sunshine.
Do you want me to drive you? I can drive you some of the way back.
No, don't. Don't. You're home now.
Well, you can. We've got a sofa bed. You can stay in the sofa bed.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Two cats.
Surprise dig me in the morning.
Yeah.
Thanks, Cal Wilson. And you can follow Cal on Twitter, etc. You'll find her. She's there. She's Calbo.
That's right.
Calbo on Twitter. And keep an eye out for her children's book. It's been Dave O'Neill here on The Debrief with Cal Wilson. Goodbye.